Hi, and thanks so much for joining us at Tycor Title Tuesdays at 2. If you can believe it, today is May 5th. Happy Cinco de Mayo to everybody out there. It's crazy to think that it's only been a month and a half or so before all the restrictions came into place, although sometimes it kind of seems like a lifetime ago. And over the last 7 weeks, information and news has been coming to us fast and furious, so much so that I think Vin Diesel is going to start expecting royalties. But everybody's in such a scramble to find out where we're going. But the most important thing before we realize that is to find out where exactly we are. And today I'm really excited to have a guest who's going to share with us just that. He has a preternatural ability to explain complexities in layman's terms. And there's an old saying that if you ever find yourself being the smartest person in the room, you need to find yourself a different room. Well, if that adage plays true, our guest today has probably had to find more rooms than we do have shuttered down on Las Vegas Boulevard. So with that, I'm really excited to bring on Adam Thurgood. Adam is a managing director and partner at Hightower Las Vegas. So Adam, thanks so much for joining us at Tycor Title Tuesdays at 2.
Yeah, my pleasure to be here, Ryan.
So, Adam, just kind of getting into it, can you share with our audience a little bit about your firm and what you guys do?
Yeah, we're a boutique wealth management firm, manage just a little bit under $1 billion, based in Las Vegas. One of five partners at the firm, and I'm the youngest by far, and I've been doing it for 20 years, so we've been around the block.
You have, and you've always, you and I have known each other since college, and you've just been such an even keel dude that I think this is a perfect spot for you, because with the ups and downs of the market, I think you kind of have to have that even keel and just be chill, and you exude that. So speaking of the market, I mean, I'd love to kind of just get your take. You know, we see companies taking record losses, unemployment numbers are sobering, and have 26 million people across the country have filed unemployment, not even to mention the health and the human cost of the COVID-19 virus. But yet April was the market's best month since 1987. What is going on? When? Why is that?
Well, it has a lot of people scratching their heads, but I think if you think of it through a series of chain of events, then it will make more sense. So we had the market in pure panic sell-off mode, and the Federal Reserve was coming in almost daily to get some support to the market, and then you had the federal government injecting some stimulus as well. And then eventually the Fed just said, we'll do whatever it takes. We have unlimited resources at our disposal. And that put a short-term floor under equities, started to get prices moving up a bit. And then if you think about what's happened over the past 10 years or so, every time the market has fallen, we've been encouraged and rewarded from buying the dip. So there's that mentality that's built into market participants. So as soon as we started to see a bit of a bounce, you had the buy the dip crowd come in. That created more upward pressure, which then freaked out the short sellers. They came in and started to close out their positions. That also put it upward pressure on the markets. And then, of course, the last of it is always the fear of missing out crowd, or the FOMO crowd, that just doesn't want to lose out on the opportunity. So they come in and push prices even higher. What's important, though, is if you think about this from a historical perspective, this type of massive move is actually not that uncommon in a bear market.
And so, and we've kind of moved out of that bear market territory now, right? Are we back into a bull market?
Yeah, I don't buy the 20% off the bottom or 20% off the high as the technical definition of a bear or bull market. I think in order to say we're out of this bear market, you need to see prices eclipse where they were when this whole thing started.
Okay, well, that's good information. Now, speaking of prices, obviously companies are starting to, we're kind of right in the middle of earnings season from the first quarter. The first quarter is a little bit different because everybody was really humming along January, February, and then March is when things really just hit the skids. So are those earnings that are coming out, are those already priced into the market, or how are the investors reacting when certain companies report on their earnings?
Yeah, well, like you said, the numbers that are being reported now are actually not that bad in relation to what they'll look like in the second quarter. But when you see a market rally like we've just seen, you're not looking at the second quarter earnings numbers and putting much credence in them. The market's forward-looking, so it's looking, let's say, 6 to 12 months, 18 months down the road and saying, okay, what's the economic environment going to look like at that point in time? And Unfortunately, I think that the market's gotten ahead of itself, because even if you take the consensus estimates for 2021 earnings, which are about $165 a share on the S&P, and you apply a bear market multiple to that, which typically range from about 12 to 15, you're still overvalued at the high end of that range by about 12% or so. And you could make a pretty strong argument that this is not a normal bear market, and therefore multiples maybe should be a bit lower. So I'm a bit nervous at these prices, because I think we've come a bit too far too fast, and there may be too much optimism in those forward projections.
And so, I mean, kind of piggybacking on that, I think all of us have been just, you know, inherently, it's hit home that we've seen these bell curves. They're just so symmetrical, you know, flattening the curve and what all we've been looking at with just that has to do with the actual virus. And then we kind of go into the, you know, the shape of the recovery. And so obviously there's people out there that are saying it's V, U, Nike, swoosh. But again, I mean, I think we're so thinking about it's going to be symmetrical. Are you kind of thinking it might be, you know, there's not a really shape that can define the recovery? Is that what you're kind of thinking with that?
I really think it's too early to tell, but if I had to put odds on the different letters, I would put a very low probability on the V-shaped recovery. I think that there's a far greater likelihood that from a financial market perspective, we see some sort of a pullback from here into the summer, when we realize that even though the economy is opening up, people are not rushing back into their old activities, partly because they can't if they have, you know, if they're part of that 20%. Will probably be unemployed in the next month or so as we report those numbers. So I don't think a V-shaped recovery is likely. I'm hopeful it's a W, but time will tell. We don't know yet how impactful this will be on a forward basis, and that really will determine what the shape looks like.
That's interesting, and again, a very measured response. So you kind of touched on the massive government stimulus that we've seen just funneled into the economy. Congress has passed, I think, four phases of their rescue bill, and you, like you said, the Fed's been injecting a lot. What, how do you think that's affecting the market? You said it stabilized it, but going forward, what's that going to look like with inflation and just that amount of money that's been flushed into the economy?
Yeah, it's a tremendous amount of money. The Fed injected more in just a few weeks than they did during the entire financial crisis. And eventually that will cause problems. It's not going to be a near-term inflationary problem, because what we're seeing on the other side of the economic spectrum is much, much worse. So we're seeing demand destruction in a lot of areas. I'm sure we'll talk about the price of oil. That's been cratered, so that's deflationary. But eventually the funds that have been injected into the economy will cause inflationary pressures. And you never know when inflation will start. And hopefully it doesn't start with things like beef prices. But inflation is the definition of inflation is too much money chasing too few goods. And so you have to be a little bit cognizant of that. And I think that there are ways to protect yourself from an inflationary environment, but it's not top of mind on my concern list today.
Okay, well, that's good to know. And I mean, you had mentioned oil prices. I can't remember if it was last week or the week before. They've all been kind of melding together, but they actually went into the negative territory. So what exactly does that mean? You know, they talk about global demand and oil prices. What can we kind of determine with that dip and what's been happening with that market?
Yeah, to put it really simply, what happened was the perfect storm of three different variables. You had an oversupply of the market because there was actually production increases due to the Saudi Arabian and Russian oil war. Then you had a complete demand destruction across the board because planes weren't flying and people were staying home and not using their automobiles. And then you just ran out of supply or storage, sorry, you ran out of a place to put it. So at the end of the day, when you have to take physical delivery of oil in the futures market and you don't have any place to put it, you end up willing to pay someone else to take that off your hands. So that was an extremely odd event and probably the most memorable day in my 20 years in the business. But when you think about it from an economic perspective, in the past, you know, 20, 30 years ago, when oil prices went down, it was a great benefit to the US economy because it was essentially like a tax cut for businesses and for consumers. But today, the US is a very large producer of oil. And when you have the kind of destruction that we're seeing today, it's actually negative for the economy. And there's a bit of a sweet spot with the oil price somewhere between, let's say, $50 and $70 a barrel. where the price is high enough to allow the oil industry to flourish, but not so high that it kills the economy.
So that's where we're kind of looking for it to fall. Now, obviously, you know, Adam, I work for a title insurance company, so real estate is what we do, and we're still seeing some activity out there. One of the things that I think is spurring most of the activity are interest rates being so low. We're having a strong refi market, even though it's dipping a little bit. And still, for the rates for the 30-year mortgage are still near historic lows, and I think that's, you know, spurring a lot of the activity that the buyers are out there. But since, you know, the 30-year rate's kind of loosely tied to the Treasury market, what exactly are we seeing in Treasuries, and what does that kind of look like for interest rates for the remainder of the year, if you can touch on that?
Well, I think it may surprise some people to hear this, but I think in the near term, rates go lower, at least Treasury rate. And you could actually see negative interest rates in the United States. Now, that sounds crazy. But if you look across the pond, Germany and Switzerland both have 10-year yields that are about negative 0.5%. Those are strong countries. And the amount of pressure that we have to keep real rates low if there's a deflationary environment is going to be tremendous. So I don't think the Fed wants to go to negative rates, but they may not have any choice. What's interesting to me, though, is that the 30-year mortgage rate is driven by the 10-year treasury to some degree. And right now, the national average mortgage rate for 30 years is somewhere around 3.5%, and the 10-year treasury is at about 0.65%. If you rewind about 4 years ago, the 30-year rate bottomed at about 3.3%, but at that time, the 10-year treasury was 1.6%, so almost one percentage point higher than it is today. And you might say, well, why is that the case? Why aren't we seeing lower rates? And I think that there's some resistance and some anxiety on lenders' behalf of taking on these long-term liabilities when so much new money has been pumped into the system, and they know that down the road that's going to be a potential inflationary problem for their return on investment on those vehicles.
And so when you touch on negative interest rates, because again, I would assume that a majority of us in the audience, including myself, aren't as familiar with that. Does that mean that that you actually get paid to borrow money, or how does that exactly work?
I don't think that it will help the borrower much. I don't think you'll see negative rates on a mortgage, but you may see a negative rate on your bank account, where maybe if you look over in Europe, in, for instance, Germany, deposits over 100,000 euros actually have a negative rate applied to them. So every month you actually have less in your bank account the longer that you keep it there. But I've only seen one instance of a negative yielding mortgage, and I just don't see that coming to the United States.
All right. Well, that's fair. Now, Adam, you know, obviously you stay in this space every single day, and like you said, you are managing a decent amount of coin. So, without getting into, you know, specific stocks or even industries, what are you kind of looking forward to, or what are you paying close attention to? Let's go in the near future, and then maybe in a little bit further on down the road to really get a sense. You said earlier that it's pretty early on this, so we don't really know. When do you think you'll feel comfortable understanding where we're going, and what are you paying attention to?
Well, right now, my focus is on the U.S. dollar. The world wants a lower dollar because there's so much debt that's denominated in dollars across the world. And fundamentally, the dollar is overvalued. But unfortunately, it hasn't fallen at all. It's actually up this year. And it looks like it could be set for a surge higher because of that massive amount of demand that is around the world pushing for dollars. Now, the Fed's trying to offset that, but if they can't, and the dollar surges higher, that's going to wreak havoc on the global financial system, which will hurt our economy as well as the rest of the world, and it will not be a very good thing for equity prices. If I fast forward a little bit longer, it's unclear where the economy goes from here. It's unclear where earnings go from here. But what is very clear to me is that all the money that's been created has, I think, ripped the Band-Aid off to some degree for what a lot of people view as a sound monetary system. And you have people now wondering, why do I have to pay taxes if you can just create $4 trillion out of thin air? And I'm afraid that that could lead to more populism in the political sphere. And it also is probably going to lead to more money printing down the road. And to me, that leads to one place, and that's gold. And I'm very bullish on gold, and our investors and our portfolios have an allocation to gold as a bit of an insurance policy against too much money being printed.
Well, that makes perfect sense. Well, Adam, again, I really want to appreciate you coming on. That will end the fastest 15 minutes. And Adam, again, just thank you so much. I know that your time is extremely valuable. That's one of the benefits of us kind of having a pause, is that a guy like you, I can actually steal a couple minutes with and really learn something. And I'm sure that our audience learns something as well. So I just want to say thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
All right. Well, I also want to thank our audience for tuning in. I hope you were able to learn a little bit of something from Adam. Also want to thank our producer, Rick Manning, down at Rigel Studios. Remember to stay safe, stay healthy, and for the time being, stay home. We will be back next week, but until then, we'll continue to be the most resourceful people in town.